We're going to read one verse tonight to sort of get us started. Acts chapter 9 and verse number 31. And we'll be probably just reading a few verses referring to throughout the week. But I did want everybody to have one of our books, 125-year anniversary. And we're going to use this and look at some of the churches and some of the pastors that we've had. Little bit I've been able to learn about them down through the years, so we are going to get to that. Tonight is just going to be sort of a review from where we left off last time. A few years ago, does anybody even know when I taught on church history and Vacation Bible School? Has anybody got a note or anything? It's been a few years ago, and I could not find my notes. I looked and I looked and I looked, and you'd think that I would be able to go back and put my hands on that, but I just couldn't find. I think I know about where we got to, so we're going to give a little review tonight. But I just wanted to read in Acts chapter 9 and verse number 31 to start with. It said, "Then had the churches rest throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria, and were edified and walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Ghost were multiplied." And that's sort of going to be the theme this week as we begin to look at some of the different churches in the county and this church and churches that were before Mount Lebanon. And they started in the early in the Bible. There was persecution to begin with. And then there was a time of great blessing that followed right after that persecution. And it's the same way in America. The church, Baptist churches specifically, started out being persecuted. Heavily persecuted. Each of the colonies had a state church. And the state church persecuted the non-state church. And so there's a time period in America of great persecution. But right after that persecution, there's a time of great revival. And actually, the church had great power and influence once upon a time, more than it does today. But we're going to begin to see some of that tonight. But I thought that was just a good verse to start with. Then had the churches rest. I was talking about immediately after the great persecution that they were going through. Were edified, meaning they were built up. Walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Ghost were multiplied. And if you know anything about what they refer to as the Bible Belt, people come from up north and they say, "Man, there's a church on every corner." Well, there's a reason there's a church on every corner. And not all of them split. Not all of them divided on bad terms. Most of them, I would say, were started on good terms. And so we're going to look at some of these things tonight. But what I'm going to begin with tonight, I'm going to go back where I thought I left off last time, the middle of the 1700s. If you remember, I've talked before about Sandy Creek and a man named Shoeball Stearns and what is referred to as the Separate Baptist Revival. And so that's where we're going to start as far as our study is concerned. And we're going to come up, I'm just going to give a short history concerning from that time period up to the Three Forks Baptist Church right over here on the other side of town. So I'm going to try to cover all that tonight. And that's quite a bit of church history, but we're just going to hit some high spots. But Shoeball Stearns, and some of you might take notes. If you wanted to, that would be fine. But there's a man named Shoeball Stearns, and he was born in 1706 in Boston, Massachusetts. He was saved in 1745. As a result, he had heard a man named George Whitfield preach. Now, I've talked a lot about George Whitfield. And George Whitfield was a Englishman. God saved him. God called him to preach. He crossed the Atlantic 13 times in his life. He died in his 50s. And he had a very influential ministry both in America and in England. And in America, he was America's first household name. even more than George Washington or Patrick Henry or Thomas Jefferson. In all 13 colonies, from Georgia all the way up north, the name of George Whitefield was pretty well known. And everywhere that he went, most everywhere that he went, he saw a lot of people saved. People would come out to hear George Whitefield preach by the thousands. Benjamin Franklin, he was contemporary with Benjamin Franklin. They knew each other. Benjamin Franklin had printed some stuff for George Whitefield, and George Whitefield was preaching up in Philadelphia, and Benjamin Franklin, he's a scientific mindset, he paced off 1 mile away, and he said that he could hear George Whitefield preaching distinctly a mile away. Now, I can see hearing a church bell ring a mile away or something like that, but he could hear him preaching a mile away. And that really set the tone. The ministry of George Whitefield, the Great Revival, that was the same time period as the Great Awakening, Jonathan Edwards, George Whitefield, a lot of others that the Lord used. But that set the tone for liberty for our country, sort of unified the country, and got them on the same page, spiritually speaking. So this man named Shubal Stearns, he heard George Whitefield preach, and he got saved in 1745. He was a Congregationalist when he got saved, but a lot of people that heard George Whitefield preach, they became Baptists, because George Whitefield, he preached to read the Bible, do what the Bible says. And although George Whitefield was an Episcopalian or an Anglican, as he came and preached and people got saved and they began to read the Bible and understand the Bible, they would understand what the Bible taught about baptism, and that the Bible taught that you were baptized by immersion. So a lot of people that heard George Whitefield preach and got saved, they became Baptists. Well, Shubal Stearns became a Baptist. He was baptized in 1751 by a man named Waite Palmer in Connecticut. He was ordained in 1751 by Waite Palmer and Joshua Morse. And in 1755, so that's 4 years later after he was ordained a Baptist preacher, he moved to Virginia. And while he was there in Virginia, he and his wife and his brother-in-law Daniel Marshall and some of their family, he felt compelled or called by God to come down into North Carolina. And I'm going to read just a little bit out of a book I've got, American Crimson Red. I referred to this last time. And some of you remember a few years ago, I went down to Calvary Baptist Church, and they had a class on Baptist history. And Dr. Beller wrote, he taught the class. And so he wrote the book, but he taught the class. And he has died since then. And he's not a very old man, but he's a real bad diabetic. And when we went back to school in the fall, they said Dr. Bellard passed away. And so that really surprised me. But I was going to read just a little bit. Now, some people have computers, and they've got it all organized and, you know, could even put it up on the screen, which we have one. But I just carry a bunch of books around. And I'm not there yet, but I do have a computer, but I like books. But I wanted to read just a little bit about his call into North Carolina. And so you give me just a minute. On June 13th, 1755. Now tomorrow, that'd be 261 years ago that Shubal Stearns felt led of the Lord to come into North Carolina. 261 years ago tomorrow, because today's June the 12th. This says, on June 13, 1755, while laboring in Northern Virginia, a still restless Shubal Stearns received a letter from some friends in North Carolina. It proved to be his Macedonian call. The work of God was great in preaching to an ignorant people who had little or no preaching for 100 miles and no established meeting. But now the people were so eager to hear that they would come 40 miles each way when they could have opportunity to hear a sermon. And so Shubal Stearns got a got a letter from some friends about how it was in North Carolina. Can you imagine in 1755 traveling 40 miles one way to hear a sermon, to hear somebody preach? I mean, how long would that take? Could you do that on a horse in a day? Yeah, I mean, you could go there maybe on a horse in a day, but you couldn't make it back home.
Take 2 days to get there.
Yeah.
2 days to get back.
Yeah.
Unless he's like Jonah.
And could run. So that would be a major undertaking. Now, Preacher Mark, when he was here on Wednesday night, he has people come to his church that comes an hour. They drive an hour, about 60 miles. But that's just an hour both ways. But they would some come from 40 miles away just to hear somebody preach. So from that time, Shoeball Stearns and his brother-in-law, Daniel Marshall, they moved down into North Carolina, into Sandy Creek, North Carolina. Now, Sandy Creek is in a little place called Liberty. And I think that's fitting that all this began in a place called Liberty, North Carolina. And it's just southeast of Greensboro from here. It's on the other side of Greensboro. But he just went down there because he felt like that's where God had told him to go to. But Sandy Creek, North Carolina, at that time, was the crossroads of three different major pathways. I don't even think you could call them roads. I guess they were roads, but not like we think. But there's three pathways that came right through there. And so the Lord knew what He was doing in putting Shoeball Stearns in this strategic location. And the three paths were known as this. There was the Settlers Road. And the Settlers Road, or it was also called the Great Wagon Road. And it ran north to south. And so it came down from up north, up down through Virginia, Pennsylvania, that area, and came, basically ran north to south, went into South Carolina and then into Georgia. And then there's another trail. It was called the Boone Trail. And the Boone Trail, or it is today, is called the Boone Trail. It went from Wilmington to the Yadkin. And so it went east to west in North Carolina. And then there's another one. It was called the Trading Path. And that came from southeastern Virginia down through North Carolina. And so these three paths is where the Lord put Shoeball Stearns. And Shoeball Stearns started, and Daniel Marshall. In fact, there were 16 people to begin with, and they started the Sandy Creek Church. And I've been down there. And you can go down there and look around on the church grounds. And it's very interesting. If you go to the Sandy Creek Baptist Church, there's a big monument there. I say big, it's probably 8 feet tall. It's probably maybe 8 feet wide, and it talks about Shoeball Stearns, and it talks about the Sandy Creek Baptist Church being the mother of all Southern Baptist churches. Now, that's not Southern Baptist as far as Southern Baptist Convention, because the Southern Baptist Convention didn't start till the right before the Civil War. But when it says the mother of all Southern Baptist churches, it's talking about Baptist churches in the South. And on that property, there are three churches. There's the church they worship in right now, the modern church. And then there's a log cabin building on that property. That was which is the oldest church in Guilford County. And it was built when John Adams was president, I think. And we met in that church and had service, and Dr. Beller taught, and they built a fire in the church. It was real cold. It was in January. And so I got a little taste of what it is to go to church where they built a fire, and if you're sitting right beside the stove, you burn up. And if you move away from it, you freeze to death. So there's no comfortable place in the church. But we had a great service in that church. And so there's that church building. And then there is a primitive, we'll talk just a little bit about that in a few minutes, but there's a primitive Sandy Creek Baptist Church. And if any of you have been right down here on Watauga River Road, there's a primitive Baptist Church in this county, and it looks a whole lot similar to that one. Just very plain, very basic, and it's a primitive Baptist church. So we'll say a little bit more about that. But that Sandy Creek Baptist Church, Sandy Creek, we could say, is the hub of the Bible Belt. From there, all the other churches can eventually be traced back to that church at Sandy Creek. They went from North Carolina, Liberty, North Carolina, or Sandy Creek, up into Virginia. They went into South Carolina, Georgia, Buffalo Ridge, Tennessee, is one of the oldest churches in this area for sure. And Shoeball Stern's first convert was a man named Tidence Lane. I've talked about him on the radio. And he got saved, and God called him to preach, and he went over here to Buffalo Ridge, Tennessee, and started a Baptist church, First Baptist Church in Tennessee. Buffalo Ridge is just outside of Johnson City. Does anybody know where Buffalo Ridge is? You're familiar with the State of Franklin? Seen that sign? It's on that road somewhere. And so Buffalo Ridge. So that's not too far from here. And so they went over into what's now Tennessee. And also as far as Gilbert's Creek, Kentucky, which is about as close as you can get to us, and go into Kentucky. And so they spread all over. The first generation, they had 16 members. And within a year, they had 600 members. And within just a couple of years, they were back down to about 16 or 20 members. And what had happened was, if we took time to study this out, and this is what I dealt with the last time, those 600, they went, and they started churches everywhere that they went. And so we are a result of that. Now, some of the earliest churches started out of Sandy Creek. Sandy Creek was started in 1755. And then in the next year, there was a church called Abbott's Creek that was started. Then there was a church called Grassy Creek, also in 1756. And in 1757, there's a church called Deep River that was started. Deep River had a pastor whose name was Joseph Murphy. And Joseph Murphy was the pastor of Squire and Sarah Boone. And Squire and Sarah Boone, that's Daniel Boone's parents. Now, when I was growing up, for some reason, I always thought or heard that Daniel Boone was a Quaker. Anybody else ever hear of that? Well, you're the one that told me that false information. He's the only one that raised his hand. Now I know. But his family evidently were Quakers once upon a time, but they were saved during this separate Baptist revival that went on. And so Squire and Sarah Boone, they were members of Deep River Baptist Church, and Joseph Murphy was their pastor. And that's interesting to us because we live in a place called Boone. And Daniel Boone wasn't a missionary by any means. In fact, my grandmother Greer, she didn't have a whole lot nice to say about him. She said, there wasn't nothing at him. He ran off and left his family all the time. And he did. I mean, he was gone a whole lot of times. But we live in a place called Boone. And this was a passageway further west to Kentucky and places like that. And so I wanted to say a little bit about Boone, about the Boone Trail. Now, I've got two books that the library let me have. This is their reference edition, and they're not supposed to loan them out, but the guy was real nice and he let me take them if I promised to take good care of them. But these are real interesting for anybody that's interested in the history of Watauga County. One is A Short History of Watauga County by Michael Hardy. And after next week, I'll take these back if anybody wants to check them out. And another one is an older book, and I've read parts of this before, by a man named Arthur, and it's called A History of Watauga County, North Carolina. And it's got a lot of interesting stuff in it as well. But I wanted to share just a little bit with you out of this book. In fact, the newer book has a lot of what the older book has in it. But is anybody familiar with the Boone Trail, the markers? There's 6 markers in Watauga County that marks out the Boone Trail where Daniel Boone came through here. And I just wanted to share a little bit with you. Now, in our mind's eye, it's very easy for me to imagine Daniel Boone coming through this area. I mean, if you stood in Wilkes County and looked west, I would pick out the lowest point, wouldn't you? I mean, that's where I would head for, I think, unless somebody told me any different. But there is 6 markers that marks the Boone Trail. And this tells a history about it and who paid for it and everything. The first mayor of Boone, W. L. Bryan, I think is his name, W. L. Bryan, and said in October 1913, talks about this is one of the 6 similar markers of iron bolted to stone boulders erected in Watauga County by the Daughters of the American Revolution. The most eastern of these markers was placed at what is now called Cook's Gap, 6 miles east of the town of Boone. Does anybody know where that is? You're from out there, but you don't know where it is. Well, it's Cook's Gap. The next is at Three Forks Baptist Church. So there's a marker at Three Forks Baptist Church, which we're going to get there tonight to Three Forks Baptist Church. The third is in front of the courthouse at Boone. The fourth is in Hodges Gap, 2 miles west of Boone. All right, Brother Finley, where's that?
My house somewhere is Hodges Gap. Always a good call that.
Above your house? Where the prison camp is? Yep. All right. I was thinking it had to be somewhere through there. So some of you Hodges ought to know where that is. The fifth is at a graveyard or straddle gap 4 miles west of Boone. And I think that's, that book says it's in Cove Creek, which that would have to be somewhere down around Cove Creek.
In the playground at Cove Creek School.
At the old Cove Creek School?
Because I don't know if it's there now or not, but it had arrowheads stuck in cement, and people took the knives and got them out. What'd you do with it?
That was my next question. Is that that where the arrowhead you've got? You didn't. And the sixth and last is at Zionville near the Tennessee line. And so the Boone Trail, well, it comes pretty much straight through the county. What's now 421 just about follows through. And so it's interesting that Daniel Boone came through here. And also down on River Street, there's the Daniel Boone cabin monument. And some of you, I know, have seen that. I know that's maybe hard to see, but it's just a pile of rocks with pointy on the end. It's right there across from where Southern States used to be, FCX, right catty corner to that. And they say, in that book, that Daniel Boone, when he would come through here and hunt, they just had cabins. They would call them hunting cabins. Not necessarily his cabin, but anybody that was hunting and got caught out, they could use the cabin. And so they said that Daniel Boone stayed there when he was up here hunting. So you've got the Boone Trail. And the Boone family were saved during that revival, when they made their way up here. Some of them were members at Three Forks. He had a nephew, Jesse Boone. It talks about that in one of these books. Some of his family married into like a lot of Greers. If you talk to Greers, they'll say, "Are you related to Daniel Boone?" And some of them say yes, and some of them say no. The ones that are yes, which our set of Greers would make that claim. He had a niece that married a Greer, and they were members out at Three Forks.
A sister married a Wilcox, and they had a daughter married a Greer.
Right. That'd make a niece, Daniel Boone's niece. So Dad always refers to Daniel Boone as Uncle Daniel. So, and it made Grandmother mad. She didn't like that because, like I said, she didn't think much about him. So there's a connection there. Daniel Boone's family, though, lived on the Yadkin. So if you went to Wilkesboro, between Wilkesboro and Yadkinville, and you got the river that runs down through there, that's where they had settled at. And so from there, he would come west and hunt up here. And not only Daniel Boone, but you think about how did all these people get to the mountains originally? Well, word of mouth, things like that. People begin to travel. People begin to move this way. There's a lot of the way they got land then, they would contract it or buy it. There was big grants. And so people would get huge tracts of land, and they would come and they would settle and lay claim to a piece of land. Like Winston-Salem, Wachovia Bank, or not the bank, but the name Wachovia, the Moravians came and moved in down there, and they called that the Wachovia. And so you get around Winston-Salem, they had a land grant. That's how they all came and congregated there. And so it's interesting. Now, Three Forks Association has some good historical information. They have a website that talks about how the Baptists first came to this area, and especially concerning Three Forks Baptist Church. But another reason why people came to this area, in 1768 in North Carolina, there was the War of the Regulators. And Governor Tryon, he was faithful to the British Crown. And, of course, the state church in North Carolina was the Church of England, or the Anglican Church. Well, there's a great revival in North Carolina, and a lot of these Anglicans have now become Baptists. And so Governor Tryon, T-R-Y-O-N, he tries to get control back for the Church of England. Church of England, Anglican, Episcopalian, is all the same thing. So sometimes I use those interchangeably, but it was the Church of England. And so Governor Tryon, he's trying to get control over all these Baptist people, and there's the Baptist people were suffering. They had to pay taxes to support a state church that they did not agree with. The Church of England had a law that unless you were married by a Church of England clergyman, that you really weren't married. Well, that galled all these Baptist people. That made them mad. How would you like to, you know, pay for a church you didn't believe or go to one of their preachers to get married, and you didn't? And so there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of taxes and things. And this is leading up to the American Revolutionary War. It's the same time period, 1768. And so the War of the Regulators, Governor Tryon comes and he basically attacks and tries to strong hand all these Baptist people. And a lot of them just quit. A lot of them just left. They left the Piedmont and they went west and they came into the mountains. Brother Trent. Not at that time. The state church? No. As far as I know, in America, the Catholics to begin with didn't have much, because so many Protestants came, and there was really early on in our country a bad taste in people's mouths towards Catholicism altogether. But the Protestants done the same things the Catholics had done. They persecuted the ones that weren't in power. And so a lot of people left that part of North Carolina. I'm going to read just a little bit from the Three Forks Association website, and it says this. It said, many of these Baptist pioneers fled the Piedmont section of North Carolina because of the regulators' war forced on them by Governor Tryon. In 1768, 3 years before the Battle of Alamance, the Baptists had despaired of seeing better time and therefore quitted the province. According to historian George Paschal, the only known settlers in the Holston River area were Baptists who began a church there about 1774. The Jersey settlement near Salisbury was the origin for settlers who formed the Three Forks Church. These were people from New Jersey who sent an agent to locate the best land still open to settlement. And this book here by Arthur, he talks about, and we probably, some of us, you probably might not want to own up to this, but he talks about our Yankee heritage. That a lot of, hey, that's hard to even come out of my mouth. A lot of y'all are actually Yankees. A lot of people in this area came from New Jersey. Came from up north and places like that. And so he talks about that. Many families traveled the great road from Philadelphia. And I was talking about the wagon road. And so they came down from Philadelphia to enter the region. Most were from England, Scotland, or Ireland, and too poor to buy land in Pennsylvania or New Jersey. Settlers from Rowan County in North Carolina came as a result of their conflict with Governor Tryon, who attempted to establish the Church of England, as was done in Virginia. They objected to marriage taxes and other forms of payment which went to the ministers of the established church by the Marriage Act of 1766. After the passage of said act, many secured the services of a Baptist minister or justice of the peace for their marriage. This is one of several reasons that Governor Tryon sent his troops to lay waste the Jersey settlement and adjacent Baptist settlements. Some 1,500 families migrated west because of this action. And so that's another reason why people began to come in this direction. Something else I wanted to read about the oldest churches, and we're getting up to talking about more about the churches in this area now. But this says, the Three Forks Baptist Association enjoys a long, rich history in the high country. A church by the same name began in Boone, North Carolina in 1790. And so if you're keeping notes, Three Forks Baptist Church was started in the year 1790. This church sponsored a large number of churches west of the Blue Ridge, becoming the founding body for the association which bears its name. There were likely three churches founded prior to this church. These were Old Fields Church, 1779. That's over in Ashe County. Old Fields and Beaver Creek Church, 1782, both in Ashe County, plus a church in the Holston River area of Tennessee. That's what I was talking about, Buffalo Ridge. And so you had these churches older than Three Forks, but Three Forks would have been the fourth oldest. The Three Forks of the New River was the base for early settlers, and Wilkes County encompassed the area west to the Tennessee line. Watauga and Ashe counties later formed in the New River region. This area also at that time was called the Watauga Settlement, and it took in a huge area. Watauga County, Avery County, over into Tennessee, Roan Mountain, Tennessee, all that huge area was called the Watauga Settlement to begin with, and then they broke it up after that. But talking about Old Fields Church, does anybody know where that is over in Ashe County? A lot of you know where Old Fields is. So if you're talking about our ancestors, you've got to start and I'm talking about Watauga County. But for the most part, you would start down in Yadkin, and you would head this way into Ashe County, and then you come into New River, you come into Three Forks, you come into the what we've always called the other side of Boone. And then it would go right on, keep going west throughout the county. But Old Fields was before Three Forks. And if anybody else, I'll say this, if anybody has any church history or family history or something you want to bring and share, feel free to do that. But we've got a little thing of church history, and I think I've shared this maybe once before, but we had a great, 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 well, I've got here, it'd be my great-grandfather times four. And so Jesse Greer, he was born in 1778, but he talks about being at the Old Fields Church. And I just thought it was interesting. It's called A Small Travail of Jesse Greer. He was born the son of Benjamin and Nancy Greer in Wilkes County, North Carolina, on the 14th of November, 1778. Then traveled on to the years of maturity under a tender father and mother. And at 16 years old, I left my parents much against their will. Then serving the devil was all my delight, till the year 1800. Then married Polly Morris, which was born a daughter of Henry and Frankie Morris on 17th September 1787. Then went on in the gall of bitterness, as there was no Lord to save or to be lost, till the year 1810 at the baptism of Brother Benjamin. I began to think that my soul must dwell with the rich man. Then I betook myself to trying to pray for about 10 months. But the devil persuaded me it was so hard that I could pray no longer, but betook myself to cursing and swearing and drinking and all kinds of sin till the year 1814. We went to a meeting to the Old Fell Meeting House, but there was no ministry came to preach. But as they thought proper that they should sing and pray, one of them began, and as I sat, I saw a small child about 12 or 13 year old crying as if she would break her heart. And it seemed to strike me like a clap of thunder to think that God was at work with such small children, and I still in the gall of bitterness. Then I went home trying to pray, but it oppressed me that God would not hear my weak petition. I soon began to think that I had passed the day of grace. I soon betook myself to my friends and to the people of God to see if they could give any consolation. But I had to go moving through the wilderness until 1815. I had been from home, and on my return home some hours in the night, I thought if I was lost, I would die praying. And as I was trying to pray, I thought that my blessed Jesus met with me and bid me not fear. Then I went home rejoicing and praising God that I had been lost but now was found, was received into the Baptist Church, and was baptized on the fourth Sunday in June, 1815. And so he's talking about going to meeting at the Old Fell Church over in Wilkes, or over in Ashe County. And so I thought that was interesting, and probably it would amaze us if you could look back through time and see just how connected we are to things like that. You know, we're not talking about Noah's Ark. We're talking about recent history. And so I wanted to share that with you. I thought that was interesting. And then later on, a lot of them, as they came, and they ended up at Three Forks. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Now, let's see if it's right here I wanted to share with you. The Three Forks Baptist Association, at first in this area, there were two associations. And when you think of associations, that was something that we think, like if we hear association or Three Forks, we automatically think Southern Baptist. But these associations were started before there was ever such a thing as Southern Baptist. And Shubal Stearns is really one of the ones that started these associations of churches. And what he did, you know, they're in the wilderness. They are so far removed from one another. Like Brother Finley, like we was talking about, you know, 2 days to go 40 miles. So Shubal Stearns started associations of churches. You had Sandy Creek. You had a lot of people getting saved. You had a lot of men surrendering to preach, and they would go out and they would start a church. And so in order to encourage one another, what they would do, they would come back. And really that's where also camp meetings started in our country. And so once a year or twice a year, they would come back, they would meet together, they would have a big meeting. And it wasn't to control or to tell other churches what to do, but it was for fellowship. It was for, you know, hey, how's it going up there in Boone and what's going on, and give us a report. It was that kind of thing. And so associations, these were not bad things at all. These were good things. They could fellowship, work together, help one another. And we'll talk about this a little bit later on, how that all these churches got started, how that that's what they did. They would go out and they would start churches in communities. And so they, these associations, that's what they did. When they could agree doctrinally together, they would be, they would call themselves an association. We're in the Three Forks. We're in the Strawberry. There's a Strawberry Association. But in our area, there was the Yadkin Association and there was the Mountain Association. And I was talking a little bit a while ago about the Primitive Baptist. And this talks about the different associations at that time. There were a few of them. In 1838, the Mountain Association declared itself an anti-missionary body, hostile to the Baptist State Convention and other institutions of the day. These groups of churches declared themselves against all modern money-based so-called benevolent societies. They tried to win others to their view and worked in the Mountain Association as early as 1836. Three Forks Association, formed in 1841 from a day of prayer and fasting and 3 years of keeping the peace with the churches of the Mountain Association. Now, the Mountain Association declared themselves to be anti-missionary. Can you imagine being in a church that your declared position was anti-missionary? But what they meant by that, and this is where your Primitive Baptist churches come from, anti-missionary, they declared themselves against all modern money-based so-called benevolent societies. So the Separate Baptists, they were very missionary. Shoeball Stearns, the churches, the first churches out of that, they were very missionary oriented. They would go and start other churches. They would help start other churches. But then it wasn't long, there come along another group and they're anti-missionary. And what they were against to begin with, they were against giving money for missions. And that they said, well, if God wants to save the heathen, He'll save the heathen. And if we're giving money towards it, we're the ones doing it, not God doing it. So that's how they come up with the anti-missionary. You know, we're not going to give money. We're not supposed to send people. If God wants to save them, He'll save them. And we don't need to be poking our noses. Of course, to me, that I can't even imagine thinking like that, but that's the way they thought. And so they become these two groups. There's the missionary and there's the anti-missionary. And a little bit later on, and we'll study about this, bring it up again later this week, but over at Beaver Dams, early on, they had two different people in the church, and one was anti and one was for. And the way the preacher supported that, they took up a collection two or three times a year, and they had a box. One was the anti-missionary, and one was the... And so they did that for a while. And but that this Mountain, you say, well, I've never heard of the Mountain Association. I didn't even know there's a Primitive Baptist Church in Watauga County. Well, if you don't evangelize, you're going to die. If we don't obey the Great Commission, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, then yeah, there's not going to be many of you. And so nobody's ever heard of the Mountain Association. Most Primitive Baptist churches are a very, very few. And I'm not saying they're not good folks, and I'm not throwing off or anything, but that's just the way it is. They don't believe in evangelizing. They don't believe in sending missionaries. They don't believe in giving money to to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. They're anti-missionary. So you still have a little bit of that today. Now we get to the three Forks Baptist Church. So we've been coming up the mountain. And in 1790, Three Forks Baptist Church, they come out of Old Fields. They'd move this in this direction. And from what I have studied about, out of families, and there's a lot of families in this county that are mentioned in these books. From what I've studied about, most every family has been kicked out of Three Forks Baptist Church at one point or another. I mean, they had a bunch of members, and I don't know how they kept any members. They'd turn about as many out a month as they'd take in a month, and is constantly doing that. And it talks about that in the history books, and even any church. Years ago, they turned people out of the church for just about anything. And, I mean, you didn't have to do much to get turned out of church. And there's a whole paragraph in here. In fact, some of Daddy's people got kicked out of Three Forks. Some Greers for looking on the wine when it stirred itself in the cup. And it's got a whole section here. They told Brother Greer let's see. The Three Forks Baptist Church in 1801. And they gave him they said for him to appear at the next meeting of that organization in answer to the charge of not having looked upon the wine cup when it was red, but having partaken of the apple juice after it had been distilled. But it said, but Ben did not take the hint, neither did he continue his membership with that church. And so he done like a lot of people. He just didn't go back. But there's a whole part in here about what you could get turned out of church for. Let's see. Well, most of you know what I'm talking about. They'd turn them out for anything, for having aught against their brother, I mean, anything. Things we wouldn't probably think much of today, they could get turned out of church for. So, let's see if I can find where I'm at here. I did want to read this. One great moral force. In the early days, when courts were few and far between, settlers scattered here and there, the only influence for good in pioneer communities was the church. This proved to be the case in this portion of Ashe County from 1790 to 1800. Nothing seemed too trivial for the correction of the church. What now appear very venial offenses were tried frequently with the result of expulsion, but always with the assurance of restoration upon proper submission and repentance. Among the more serious offenses thus punished was one case of adultery in 1794, one case of drinking to excess in 1795, one case of disposing of property to defraud creditors in 1798, and in 1799 a man confessed to fornication. And it goes on and on, and it goes on down and talks about things that they had done. And then it talks about things that were pretty much trivial. Let's see. I did want to point out something before I stop tonight. And that is some of the early pastors of Three Forks. Let's see. See, I've not been able to mark this book up, so it's hard for me to. In my books, I just highlight and mark things up. Well, does anybody know who the first pastor of Mount Lebanon was? It's in the little book there. D.C. Harmon? Okay, here's what I wanted to find. This is talking about three forks. Three forks. Started in 1790. It said, among the first pastors of this mother church are Richard Gentry of Old Fields, John G. Bynum, who died in Georgia, Mr. Barlow of Yadkin, Nathaniel Vannoy, George McNeil of Wilkes, Joseph Harrison of Three Forks, Jacob Green, D.C. Harmon, Smith, Ferguson, Brazilla McGride, and Jacob Green of Cove Creek. So, the first pastor of Mount Lebanon was D.C. Harmon, who also was a pastor at Brushy Fork Baptist Church. We'll talk a little bit more about him as the week goes on. But he was also a pastor, not the first, but down the line, he was a pastor at Three Forks Baptist Church. So when we think about church history, we might think about, boy, 1755, that's a long time ago, and that's nothing to do with us. But there's a lot of connections as you look back through the history. And so starting tomorrow night, we're going to look a little bit more at Three Forks, Cove Creek, Zionville, and we're going to look at some of these churches. We're going to look at some of these pastors. But what I want to do tonight, and we're going to stop because they're going to come back in here, is just establish that connection. In history, what we say, well, that's 260-some years ago. It's not really that long ago when you look at people's lives and how long they lived. And so the connection between the pastors and the churches, it's really a lot of interesting stuff. So if you've got something you'd like to bring or share throughout the week, especially when we start talking about some of these that some of you might remember, feel free to do that. And I heard them outside over there, so we'll go ahead and dismiss.
Old Three Forks Church was?
Not exactly.
You go down to the bridge and take that road right.
Mm-hmm.